Good morning. It's good to see everyone out this morning. I'll be honest with you if I can get this on. This has not been a very pleasurable week in sermon preparation at all. I have a text from which to preach and a sermon to share with you, but I think that I would rather not. It's, I think, incredibly relevant, but it is such a heavy subject to think and to work through. And I looked at this text a few different ways because the text deals with anger and frustrations and making amends and reconciliation. My mind went all kinds of different directions. I think of the fact that we live in a very polarized culture, that we live in a culture where people take very opposing viewpoints and very opposing sides, and we live in a culture where people say all kinds of things about one another. We live in a culture of anger. This virus that has ravaged our world has at times filled us with such tension and such frustration and such anger that we have taken it out on each other in saying and doing things that have only served to drive us further apart. I thought about some of the frustrations and anger and tensions we deal with on a smaller scale in our homes and families. I thought of some of the temptations and conflicts and angers that we have for our neighbors, with people in our community. My mind went all sorts of different directions. And then I had a friend pass away, and not long after that, another friend passed away, and then Doris, give me just a second. I don't know how to put death in its own box. I can do that with lots of different things, not with death. So I sat and I just took stock of this last year. And I thought and I pondered on this last year, all the violence and death that we've watched on our TV sets and we continue to watch today. You don't have to think very long or very hard over the last year to understand that our world is on fire. That we have communities all over this world in understandable frustration saying we have had enough. Our world is on fire, and that is nothing new. Our world has been on fire for generations. Even before this country was a country, our world has been on fire. A fire of anger. A fire of frustration, a fire that so often burns and consumes families and communities and nations and the world, and it threatens to consume us all. Anger is so much like a fire. Just, it starts as a small little spark. You felt that spark, haven't you? Maybe it's something in the news that has sparked your heart. Maybe you cut somebody off in traffic, or they cut you off in traffic, and somebody has to take it out on the other. Or you have a neighbor. I have a neighbor who doesn't take care of his dogs the way that I think he should take care of his dogs, and it sends a spark of anger. Maybe it's something little. Maybe it's something big. Maybe it's something that you've just started to deal with. Maybe it's been your lifelong problem, but that little spark of anger lands in your heart, and it grows and it grows and it grows until it's a fury, and you become enraged and outraged in your heart, and that building fire keeps going until most of the time it catches your tongue on fire. And then from your mouth comes forth all sorts of things. It comes from my mouth. How about yours? You say something you regret. Maybe you say it to your neighbor. Maybe it's to someone on the highway. Maybe it's your spouse or your kids. But out of your mouth comes this spark, this flame of anger and frustration, and it lands on someone else's heart. And then that process starts all over again, and that small spark begins to grow in their heart. And it sets their self on fire, and it burns their tongue. And they say and do things that only makes the fire grow worse and worse. And the fire rages all around us. And it has for generations. And it has for centuries. In every tribe, in every nation, in every group of people that have ever existed. Even all the way back to the beginning. Two brothers, Cain and Abel. And a spark of jealousy, a spark of hatred. A spark of anger, a spark of frustration grew in Cain's heart. And God said, it's like an animal The sin that's at your door, it wants to devour you and you must conquer it. And Cain, he didn't. And that anger and frustration grew and grew until it consumed him and he murdered his brother. This is the way of humanity. Anger grows into rage and frustration. Anger manifests itself in words and deeds and in violence and hate and anger and rage. And over again as the fire spreads and threatens to consume us all. Jesus stepped into a world that was on fire. Can you imagine what it was been like in the first century? Today, we have racial tensions. We have political tensions. We have ideological tensions, frustrations, barriers, and polarizations. And the same was true of Jesus' day. Jews and Samaritans, Romans and Greeks, Pharisees, Sadducees, tax collectors, zealots, those who made friends with Rome and those who wanted to kill anyone who made friends with Rome, and Jesus stepped in to that world. Can you imagine some of the conversations that happened? Maybe at the home of Simon the Zealot, one of Jesus' apostles. He was one of those zealots who was a person who passionately and zealously wanted to defend Israel and Jerusalem. He wanted to take it back from the Romans. Can you imagine the conversations that his family had around the dinner table about people like Matthew the tax collector and about how much they hated and they despised people like that who made friends with the Romans, who took advantage of their own countrymen, who betrayed and turned their back on their own Jewish brothers? Can you imagine the conversations, the vitriol, the hatred and frustration that came from their mouths of people like Simon and his family? And what they had to say about Matthew and his. Or can you imagine the other side of that, the conversations around Matthew's dinner table and what people in his family thought about people like Simon and his family, the things that they would say about them, how they felt about them, the things that were growing and growing in their own hearts. The world in which Jesus stepped into was on fire. Israel, Jerusalem, the Israelite people, the people who were supposed to be God's people were tearing themselves apart at the seams, and Jesus knew it. In fact, Jesus knew that in most of his contemporaries' lifetime, that Jerusalem was going to be burned to the ground by Rome. Jesus knew that they were tearing themselves apart. And notice that Jesus doesn't call people to defend Jerusalem. And Jesus doesn't call people to hasten the fall of Jerusalem. Jesus calls his disciples to be different. He calls every household of his followers to be different, to be peacekeepers, to be the people who aren't fanning the flames of anger and frustrations. They're there, and they are real, and they are understandable. And they are in our day, and they were in Jesus' day, but Jesus doesn't call his disciples to fan the flames of anger and frustration. Instead, he calls on them to make peace. In this series of lessons, we've been talking about how our homes, if we are followers of Jesus, should be little embassies of the kingdom of heaven. A little piece of ground where God's will be done there as it is in heaven. And when we're seeking to do the will of God on earth as it is heaven, even if that means it's just our little piece of earth, I wish I could fix all of the problems of the world. I wish I knew how. I wish I knew how to take care of all of the anger and strife and frustration and death and destruction. I wish I could snap my fingers and it would all be away. But I don't have control over that. I don't have control over every heart. But I do have control over mine, that I can work to say for me and my household, we will serve Jesus. Our homes should be embassies of the kingdom, an embassy of peace, an embassy where we speak out against evil, but that we don't answer evil with more evil, and that we don't answer anger with more anger. We answer fire not with more fire, but we make it our goal to live at peace with all men. We make it our goal to overcome evil with good. And so Jesus says in Matthew 5:21, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. And I want you to notice a couple of things here. First of all, peace is not just broken when someone dies. Peace is not just broken when the sword leaves the sheath. Peace is not just broken when the bullet leaves its chamber. Peace is not just broken when a person's breath is taken from them. Peace is broken long before that. Peace is broken when, listen to what Jesus says. Peace is broken when the anger builds up in your heart. Peace is broken when the insults go flying. Peace is broken when you say you fool. And Jesus says it's not just the murderer who is liable to judgment. The murderer is liable to the judgment and justice of God. The one who takes someone else's life, God will judge. The murderer is liable to the judgment. But the people of Jesus' day would say, well, you've heard it said, we believe, we accept, thou shalt not murder, right? But Jesus says it goes beyond that. And I'm calling on my followers, every home of my followers, to accept a higher standard of that. And to understand that the peace is not just broken before murder happens. The peace is broken with anger and insults and with name calling. Look at what Jesus says over and over again. Liable, 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 guilty, answerable. Who? Who's answerable? Who's guilty? Who's liable? The murderer? Yes. And also the one who is angry. And also the one who insults. And also the one who name calls. And before we say, see, it's all those other people out there that are so angry. It's the other group. It's the other side. It's the people who don't see the things the way I do. The people who don't come from where I come from. The people who don't look like I look like. It's them. Those people that don't have my perspective. It's them that's causing all of this fire in the world. But this morning, which of us here is innocent? Which of us is innocent of being angry with our brother and allowing that rage and allowing that fury to grow and burn in our hearts? Which of us is innocent in saying things that we ought not say in anger? Which of us is innocent in name calling? Jesus says, if you've done any of these things, if you've harbored that anger and bitterness in your heart, if you've allowed your tongue to burn with anger and you've insulted your brother and you've called him raca, as some versions put it, an empty-headed fool, you empty-headed worthless one, then you too are guilty. So do you know who's guilty of fanning the flames of anger and frustration, of hatred that ends in death and destruction? Do you know who's guilty? I am. I am guilty of doing those things. I have participated in that anger. I have participated in fanning the flames and spreading the fire. And Jesus wants everybody of his generation to understand, and he wants everyone of our generation to understand, you're all liable. As sure as the fires of hell that are going to come and consume and destroy, you have to recognize that you are liable to the judgment, that you are liable to the hell of fire, and Jesus calls us out of it. Jesus calls his disciples to stop participating in fanning the flames. Jesus calls on the people of his generation, in his culture, in his world, out of it. And he calls you and I out of it as well. He calls us to stop fanning the flames of anger and outrage and loathing in our hearts. Stop allowing those words to come out of our mouths in anger, because here's what happens. We've talked about it. That spreads the flames. Every time in my righteous indignation and I say something in anger or I type something in fury, it spreads that fire. It was happening before their very eyes in Israel, and it's happening before our very eyes today. And not just with the events of recent history. Not just with the events of last week or this year or last year or 25 years or 100 years. This fire has been burning long before any of us were ever born, and the fires of Jesus' day were burning long before any of them were born. But Jesus is the great I Am, who was around long before Abraham. And he sees where this train is headed. And so he calls his followers, the tax collectors and the zealots, the Pharisees and the Sadducees. He calls on everyone who would listen to his voice, stop. Stop. Because you're all guilty. You're all liable. You're all answerable. And you need forgiveness. And that's what I need. I need God's forgiveness for participating in this anger and in the blame and in the name calling. I need forgiveness and I need to be called out of it. And then Jesus says this. He says, so if you're offering your gift at the altar and there, remember your brother has something against you. Now here, Jesus is getting incredibly practical. Here's how we begin to extinguish the flames of strife and contention around us. Any single follower of Jesus did not have the ability to stop the fans or the flames of contention in Jerusalem. And you and I don't have the ability or power to stop all the flames of contention and strife in our world. But here's what we can do. Jesus says, if you're offering your gift at the altar and you remember that someone has something against you, he's kind of switched gears here, hasn't he? Before he was talking about if you're angry at others, if you're calling other people names, if you're saying you fool about others, but here Jesus says, but if you're offering a gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, someone has said something about you being wrong, someone has said that you are the fool. Jesus deals with both sides of the conflict because we all have the tendency to spread it. Whether it's because people are angry at us and think we've done something wrong or accused us of wrongdoing, maybe it's on a small scale, maybe it's on a big scale, maybe in your home or your neighborhood, maybe it's in the church, maybe it's on the national scale. We all have the tendency, whether someone is accusing us or we are accusing someone else, Jesus speaks to both sides of the conflict. And he says, if you're offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, take the initiative. He says, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Whether you have something against somebody or they have something against you, take the initiative. Be the peacekeeper. Be the reconciler. Go to them. Again, I wish I knew how to solve all the problems in the world of hate and anger and injustice, but I do know how to do it on a personal level. And it's exactly as Jesus says, first, go be reconciled. Go, have a conversation. We desperately need to be having conversations. Listen to each other. If someone is making accusations against you, if something has something against you, or you're angry with someone else about something that they may or may not have done, go to them. Talk to them. Talk about how you both feel. Listen to their perspective. Listen to their frustrations, to their fear, to their anger. Talk with each other. First, be reconciled. Notice he says first. First before what? First before offering your gift at the altar. And for a first century Jew, what could be more important than offering your gift to the altar to God? And Jesus says, I'll tell you what's more important. Reconciliation. That's more important. Relationships, that's what's more important. Peacemaking, that's what's more important. Rituals can be incredibly important, commanded by God to be part of our worship life, but God is not interested in our rituals if we are not interested in relationships. If we are not interested in making peace with our neighbors, then God is not interested in our gifts, in our songs, in our prayers. Jesus isn't interested in our sacrifices unless we are interested in mercy. God desires mercy, not sacrifice. Yes, come back and offer your gift. Yes, but first, go and be reconciled. Jesus prioritizes reconciliation. Jesus prioritizes relationships. Jesus prioritizes peacemaking and expects the same to be done by those who follow him. In our homes, relationships, reconciliation, peacemaking, unity has to take priority. Priority of all those other things, they are important. They should be done, but they should not take priority over making peace with the people in your life. I wish I could make peace on a national scale. I believe that we can be a part of making peace on a national scale, even on a worldwide scale, because there are followers of Jesus in every country. And if we could just embrace these truths, I believe that we could make a difference on a global scale of making peace. But I know what we can do right here, right now. And that's prioritizing peacemaking. Prioritize relationships. Prioritize unity. Make peace with someone who is angry with you or that you are angry with. And verse 25 says, come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're still going to him, while you're still going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and you be put into prison. Truly, I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny. Conflict escalates. That's the nature of conflict. Anger escalates. It just does. When you say something to someone and they hear it, their level of anger goes up and they respond to you, and then your level of anger goes up, and then the conflict rises and rises, and then at some point it's out of control and it's irreparably broken. Jesus says, come to terms quickly with your accuser before it escalates. Reconcile before it gets out of control. I was thinking about the feud between the Hatfield and the McCoy families. 13 people died in that feud. And it all started over a lawsuit over a hog. An accusation that one person from one family had stolen a hog from the other family. And from there, a feud would break out that would last for years and claim 13 lives. What would it look like if they took Jesus' words seriously here? That they came to terms quickly. Make peace. Be reconciled before things escalate. Your relationship with your spouse, your kids, your neighbors, your grandchildren, your parents, your siblings, that they can get out of hand very quickly. Accusations get made and tempers start to fly. Words are said, and before you know it, things are broken. And Jesus says, don't do that. Come to terms quickly. Make peace before things escalate. Just like a fire. It starts like a small spark and it's manageable. It could be extinguished quickly, but before you know it, it grows and that small flame has turned into a raging fire. You've experienced that in your own relationships. Maybe with your spouse or your kids or your parents or a sibling or a neighbor. We're all guilty. We've all been angry. We've all fanned the flames. We've all said and done things that we shouldn't have done, and we've participated in and contributed to the strife and the contention and the anger and the conflict in the world. And Jesus calls us to recognize our liability. Recognize, Mike, that you are liable. You are guilty to stand before him and seek forgiveness and a better way. And this is the better way, Jesus says. Jesus calls our family. Calls us, calls me to strive to be a family that extinguishes the flames of strife. What does your family do with strife? What does your family do with conflict? What does your family do when someone makes you mad? When someone within the walls of your household or even outside the walls of your house make you mad? It's natural. There's nothing more natural than getting angry. That's just what we do. When someone says something hurtful to us, when someone does something hurtful to us, there's nothing more natural in the world than getting angry with them. And there's nothing more natural than fanning the flames of that anger until it grows and grows, until you do or say something that can't be taken back. That's just natural. But Jesus doesn't call his followers to be natural people. He calls us to be spiritual people. He calls us to walk by the Spirit and not by the flesh. So in our homes, we must strive to be a family that extinguishes the flames of strife. As those sparks come up, and they're going to, when they fly from our tongue or someone else's, when those sparks enter our house, we have a choice. What will we do with our anger? And conflict and strife are small. Will we come to terms quickly? Will we extinguish them flames, or will we fan them until they consume us? There is nothing that God loves more than unity, and there is nothing God hates more than disunity. And I want us to be a unified people for our own sake and for the world's sake. We must be peacemakers. We must prioritize relationships. We must prioritize reconciliation. We cannot allow tension and strife and conflict to grow between us and drive us apart. Our unity is the testimony to the deity of Jesus. He says that in John chapter 17. The world knows that Jesus is God's son by our unity, by our oneness. And we can't allow the flames of strife and conflict to drive us apart. We have to come together. And again, that means we have to have conversations. And we have to listen to each other. And we have to allow each other to share our fears, our frustrations, our anger, our accusations, and have to come to terms with one another. We have to reason with each other and talk with each other, but we also have to have this tenacious unity that says, because of Jesus, I'm not going to let you go. Because of Jesus, yes, you frustrate me at times, and I may not like what you have to say all the time, but I'm not going to let you go. I'm going to love you because we are part of the same family, and our unity is a testimony to the deity of Jesus. Many of us have a fire inside of us that needs to be extinguished. We have to acknowledge. I have to acknowledge my own liability and guilt and seek forgiveness from Jesus. And thankfully, Jesus pardons all. He pardoned both the zealot and the tax collector. He pardoned both the people who compromised with the Gentiles and those who couldn't stand to watch people compromise. He pardoned everyone who would come and be his disciple, and he made them into one people. Not to take sides on one side or the other, not to even stand in the middle, but to change, to be different, a different kingdom, a different way of living. That's what he's still calling us to be different, to have families that are different, that seek him first. This morning, if you're not a Christian, we urge you to make that decision, to follow Christ, to put him on in baptism. We also understand that your walk with Christ may get rocky at times. You may have found your faith wavering, and you want to come back. We're here for that as well. Please come as together we stand and we sing.